Call the Board of Supervisors meeting to order. The Board of Supervisors has met in closed session and had a report from staff on item one, conference with labor negotiators. Item two, conference with real property negotiators. The board gave direction to staff. Item 4B, the board received a report from council, and there were no confidential minutes. The board will convene back into closed session after our regular portion of our meeting and cover the remaining items. At this time, if you could all stand and join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God.
Thank you for joining us today, and board members, can I have approval of the agenda?
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the agenda. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Public matters not on the agenda. Discussion items only. No action to be taken. Any person may address the board at this time upon any subject within the jurisdiction of the Amador County Board of Supervisors. However, any matter that requires action may be referred to staff and or committee for a report and recommendation for possible action at a subsequent board meeting. Is there any public comment at this time? Yes, ma'am. How are you today?
Anderson, Sutter Creek.
Could you pull the mic right down in front of you and sign in for the record, please?
Andy, okay. You can hear me.
Okay. Thank you.
The pen doesn't work. Sign in afterwards. I'm going to read you a letter, and then I just have a couple of comments, and I won't take a whole 5 minutes.
Actually, it's only 3 minutes in our time.
Oh, 3 minutes. Oh, I better hurry. We would like to thank you for your investment in the Amador Council of Tourism. This investment reflects recognition of the success that ACT has had in implementing significant tourism support for our county. It is with disappointment and dismay that we have learned that your preliminary budget for this coming fiscal year reflects a large decrease in funds for the Amador Council of Tourism. For the past 6 years, this organization has been the only entity in our county whose sole purpose is to promote countywide tourism. Given the fact that tourism is a significant revenue generator for the county, for the municipalities, and the citizens, we believe that negatively impacting tourism efforts is short-sighted. During tough economic times, it is even more important to remain steadfast in our commitment to continue to build one of our few sources of revenue. It was the will of the voters that the county transient occupancy tax should be directed toward increasing marketing of our county. This is what we promised and why we supported the county's efforts to increase the TOTs. Both the Sutter Creek Promotion Committee and the Sutter Creek Business and Professional Association have made dollar commitments to partner with ACT to advertise and market Amador County. If these opportunities are limited due to the need for ACT to dedicate increased funds to administrative functions, this will not only affect ACT's marketing efforts, but those of us who partner with ACT to leverage our funds. ACT's partners invest real dollars in supporting the countywide efforts to support and increase tourism. We hope that you recognize that the county also benefits from the leveraging of these funds. It is a real tool for all of us to make our investments meaningful and effective. We really ask that you will reconsider the significant decrease in funding to Amador Council of Tourism. And just my personal comments, I have a copy of the letter for you. You know, there's always a mad rush by all of us to try to evaluate and measure the investment of marketing dollars, and that's common sense, and that's good. And there are many ways that we can measure. For example, when we have enough money to advertise in Sunset Magazine, we love the fact that we get leads back from them, people who respond to that advertising. send in a card, then we send back information in Sutter Creek. We do it. ACT does it for the county. On our websites, we're very able to have what we call analytics, where we can see how effective our website has been, how many hits we've had, what people are interested in. Those are good ways to measure. But marketing isn't all about, we don't have the ability to measure everything. But we all know, living in the world that we live in, that advertising must pay, because we are inundated with it at every turn. Probably the most unfortunate way of measuring marketing is when we don't advertise. That's very, very measurable in the end. We who are the partners of ACT participate in determining the direction of where our advertising and our marketing will go, and it's done with a great deal of thought and deliberation, and a lot of us have backgrounds in marketing where we know what works and we know what doesn't work. So I'm really asking you, if you could reconsider, I know these are tough economic times, but this is not the time to cut back on our marketing and advertising. All of we who are partners really count on the fact that our municipalities are committing monies towards the marketing and advertising of tourism. As I told you once before, we worked very, very hard 6 years ago to get the municipalities to participate with that, because everybody wanted to advertise their own towns. This is not happening anymore. So we have a real effective joint effort. So that's my plea. Please keep this in mind.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a comment for the record. Because of the statements made in the reading of that letter. Twice in that letter, it was stated that there's been a significant decrease in funds to ACT. And it should be pointed out that there has actually been a projected $52,000 increase in the amount of money going to ACT this year as a result of the awarding of the full 4% increase in TOT tax from the county. That's a $67,000 a year projected revenue stream from TOT taxes, and 100% of that revenue has been granted to ACT for the next 18 months. And with the $15,000 reduction in general fund contribution monies to ACT, they still have an increase of $52,000 a year. So I just don't think it should go uncommented on the record that this is a decrease.
It was actually $10,000 we reduced the ACT funding by, not 15. Oh. So, yeah, it was less than that.
Also, Mr. Sure. Chairman, I'd like to comment, too.
Chief Fraser.
I think also what's not being said, too, if my memory is correct, when I came on board the Board of Supervisors, I don't believe ACT was getting any funding from the Board of Supervisors. So, I mean, to say that we're decreasing funding, like we're tacking, I think is a long ways from the facts.
I think there's just a concern that with the general fund decrease that, and the fact that none of the TOT funds have been received, that there is just a real concern that this could be eroded. Thank you.
Well, I think that the further concern is that ACT will have to dip in to that 4% to balance the budget that they previously had. So it means that the 4% is actually being diminished, the overall effect on it of what the voters voted for. So I think there's where some of your concern is coming from also.
Maybe I didn't address that very well in the letter, because that's what I said here. If these opportunities, the increased funds will have to go towards some administrative functions. So. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Are there any other public comment? Supervisor Novelli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few words here. First of all, I want to let everybody know out there that the veterans will hold an open clinic the first Thursday of May and the first Thursday of November. So I wanted to get that word out ahead of time. That will be an open clinic up at the Legion Hall for all veterans in regards to any health issues, in regards to any veteran issues. We're going to have an open clinic. first Thursday of May, first Thursday of November. The second thing, sir, I wanted to say is that ATCA is now have the bid packages are available for the transitional housing at 1003 Broadway Street. That's right across the street from the CHP office. The transitional housing project located at our old social services building. The bid packages are at the ATCA building on Highway 49 South, and they're also at the City Hall in Jackson. So our contractors that are out there that are looking for work, and, you know, maybe they could get online or go out there and look at these packets. This packet for this building has a clause in it that you must be from Amador County or from Tuolumne County in order to participate in this. The last word I heard that we had five contractors that have already looked at the packages, and some of them had purchased plans for that.
Can I ask you for clarification on that health clinic for vets? Is that any way to do with a qualification for benefits for them, or is it just for medical issues?
It's for anything that has to do with veterans in regards to you're a brand new vet, you've never been qualified with the VA, you could go down there and get signed up. So anything that has to do with new vets, old vets, health clinic, et cetera, if you lost some of your forms or whatever. The other thing is I wanted to say that I still haven't heard any more concerns about the IGA Payless market issue that's going on upcountry. So as of yesterday, I haven't heard any news. I went to upcountry council last night, and I haven't heard anybody at the council saying that we've heard anything new. The only thing that's still out there is that Mr. Young has guaranteed that he would let the employees know 30 to 60 days in advance of when the doors might close. So other than that, that's it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments? All right. We'll move on to the consent agenda.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second. Moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. We'll go on to our regular agenda. Item 6 on the agenda, Assembly Bill 109, discussion of possible action relative to a presentation by Sheriff Martin Ryan and Chief Probation Officer Mark Benigni relative to impacts and developments regarding the subject bill. Morning, gentlemen.
Morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Not knowing exactly where the board wanted to head with our discussion, I did prepare, and I believe the sheriff may have prepared some handouts for you as well, but I'll let him get to that. Is it okay if I approach and give you guys these?
Thank you, Mark.
Chief.
Thank you.
As you know, back in October of 2011, the governor bestowed upon us realignment, and we've continued from even before that date to work on the issues and the impacts to our local system. I think it was important at that time that the state didn't come forward and say, this is realignment, this is how you're going to do it, and have us do it their way. They gave us an opportunity to look at our local issues and come up with a local plan. That plan was worked on by stakeholders within Amador County. That executive committee that made up the CCP, the Community Corrections Partnership, was the sheriff, myself, the district attorney, the presiding judge of the Superior Court or their designee, a chief of police, which happened to be the chief of police of Jackson, the health and human services director, the public defender, and the district attorney. We came together along with our other partners within the community that chose to appear and be heard at our meetings, and developed the plan. That plan was approved by you, I believe, in March of 2012. The code called that we had to come up with and present one plan, and we did that, and we continue to work under that plan as we move forward. Just to give you some idea of those stats that I just provided you and kind of where we are and where we were and where we think we may be going, at least from my perspective and some of the things that I see. Under realignment, the state called for realigning some offenders that went to parole and assigning those offenders for supervision under the probation departments of the counties. Those cases were called the post-release community supervision population, or the PRCS cases. In October of 2011 to September 31st of 2012, CDCR made a projection that Amador County would see 37 cases, and actually during that year we received 38, so the projections were actually quite close. In October of 2012 to present, CDCR projected 9, and we've seen 10, so we've had one more in that respect as well. This population, this PRCS population, also was a population that when they were under parole supervision was seeing a self-admitted by CDCR violation rate of 70%. Currently, what we see with the same population is a violation rate of 31%. So we're doing considerably better with this population. However, this again is a population that's volatile and lends itself to recidivating and being returned to custody. But having a violation rate of 31%. Is actually quite good. The unfortunate part is, due to those violations, we've used approximately 2,459 bed days in our jail for those revocations. That actually is 1,230 beds because the offenders get half time. Nonetheless, that's still a lot of bed time. And the average stay that we've seen for our PRCS violations is 144 days in jail. Again, that's 72 actual days that they spend there. And I'm sure the sheriff will comment a little bit on the jail and what's going on over there. The same population, the PRCS population, we were given ways to terminate their case, either successful, unsuccessful, or otherwise. And from October 2011 to present, we've had 26 terminations, of which 11 were terminated at the six-month mark, meaning that the governor in the code said that if an offender is not returned or there is no custodial sanction during that first six-month window that the offender comes out of prison, the probation department may terminate that case. So after we do an internal review, an administrative review of those cases, we terminated 11 in that manner. Two were terminated at the one-year mark if no custodial sanction was levied upon that individual. And that one-year mark is a must. If an offender was released from prison, was under our supervision, made it a year with no custodial sanction, then we must release them from supervision. Eight were terminated for unspecified reasons, and five were terminated by the court. For some reason, the offender went back to court, more than likely on a violation. The court remanded them for the maximum amount of time for a violation and then terminated their supervision. Under the code, there was also a new class of supervision, mandatory supervision cases that we see. In essence, it's a way for the court to sentence somebody that they cannot sentence to state prison anymore, sentence them locally, but also split that sentence, meaning they'll do some jail time and they will also do some time under our supervision. It allowed us to take a look at the offender in the community after a jail sentence was complete. Now, the court doesn't have to split those sentences. The court can order them to do straight jail time. The unfortunate part about that is that then there is no tail on that offender once they are released. I prefer to be able to observe them at least for that six-month window back in the community. After all, under the post-release community supervision population, we get at least a six-month window. Those are offenders coming back from prison. These offenders that are on mandatory supervision, if they're not granted mandatory supervision and they do straight jail time, do nothing but jail time and are released with no tail. So why wouldn't we want to have some sort of local tail on those individuals to see how they're doing and hopefully assist them in progressing through their supervision? Amador County in 2011 and 2012 saw 11 cases where mandatory supervision was granted, and October 2012 to the present, we've seen 17. So we've had an increase in that area. I think it's bode well for the continued education of the court, the district attorney, the public defender, to see those numbers go up. I think it's important to follow those individuals. Along with the plan, we also took on revamping our alternative sentencing program. I don't have any hard statistics at this point. I was waiting for basically for a year to go by to report on the bed days that we've managed to avoid with allowing individuals to participate on alternative sentencing. But what we did was we changed the process by which an individual gets put on that type of program. An offender used to go to court. They would be sentenced to probation. There may have been some jail sentence attached to it, and the court would allow that person to do the alternative sentencing program in lieu of custody. Then, and in the event the individual failed, it would require us to file a violation of their probation and get that matter before the judge, for the judge then to recall that sentence and remand them to jail. There's a lot of work involved in that. I mean, it sounds really easy, but there's a lot of paperwork and a big paper trail. Now, an offender goes to court. If they're granted probation and there's a jail sentence, it's a jail sentence. Then the individual is given a remand date. They're allowed to report to our department for an evaluation where we use an evidence-based tool to determine their risk to the community. If they want to participate in alternative sentencing, because some don't, they'd rather go to jail. So we evaluate them, we assign them out, and then if the individual happens to fail, we bring them straight to jail. We avoid that other system that could sometimes take 15, 30, 45, 60 days to get through the court process. So we are evaluating every person that hits the jail unless the court at sentencing says this person cannot have alternative sentencing. So we continue to head down that road. I hope to have some numbers and some hard evidence as to how we're doing in that respect. Regarding the budget, it seems like everybody likes to talk about money.
Hey, Mark, before you go there, though, can I touch base on something, Chief Bonini? I'm sorry. You just mentioned that some prefer to go to jail even though your department may declare them eligible for alternative sentencing. What takes precedence there? I mean,
well, we can't force somebody to do alternative sentencing, but the issue and the reason why that sometimes that's the case is when they're on alternative sentencing, they don't get any time credit. They don't get any good time credit. So if you get a 90-day alternative sentence, it's 90 days that you do. If you go to jail, you do 45 days. But you're there 24 hours a day.
Some of them just want to go home, too. Unfortunately, they're more comfortable in jail than they are on the outside sometimes.
Sometimes. And again, we prefer they do, if they're eligible, they do alternative sentencing. I mean, it gives us an opportunity to supervise them. It gives them an opportunity to pay back the community.
Yeah.
It frees up bed space. It does all of those things. But again, we can't make them do that. I mean, we could make them do it, but in most cases they'll fail, and then we'll return them to custody anyway. So, you know, why head down that road?
And you give clarification on those inmates that are sent to us by the state, are they inmates who have were residents of Amador County and committed a crime, or were they just anyone that committed a crime in Amador County?
That population that's been realigned to us, CDCR uses a couple of different terms, county of last legal residence. That's generally the county where the offender goes. Sometimes, though, it's by the sheer fact that maybe they were homeless, but they didn't live here, but the offense was committed here. It still shows us as the county of last legal residence. However, when those cases are given to us, we usually get a 90 to 120-day window. We evaluate them right out the gate. So if the person usually during that time is still in custody, if we see an issue, we'll send it back to CDCR and get that packet to that county where it belongs.
So if I understand what you said, it's not for those cases that may be from Stockton, Sacramento, outside of Amador County that committed a crime in the county, even though they may have been prosecuted in Amador County?
Correct. I mean, they could initially come here, but transferring those cases back to the county of residence is relatively easy. It doesn't involve the court process, so it's easy to hand those cases off to the appropriate county for supervision. Anybody else have any questions? It was
on the financial.
On the financial side of things, you know, we discussed this at the budget hearings, and I submitted the budget on behalf of the Community Corrections Partnership. It looks like, through April of 2013, We've deposited $965,000 and some change into that budget. We carried forward from last year $505,000 and some change. Using our estimates from the 12-13 community corrections budget, we may have a carry forward funds of approximately $1.1 million in that budget. Part of that is due to the fact that myself, the sheriff, and we didn't hire some of the full-time employees that we anticipated we might need to hire. I remain down one officer as to what the realignment plan said. That's based solely on the fact that I don't think I have the numbers yet to justify hiring that officer, so I'm looking at continuing to not fill that position and roll that money forward and use that as a contingency fund in the event that funding is pulled. We've budgeted very conservatively as far as the community corrections budget goes, and we continue to do so. The sheriff didn't hire two of his full-time equivalent positions, and if he wants, he can speak to that issue as well. But and under the other position that we hired, Behavior Health hired one full-time position, and that was what we allotted to them. So I think at the present time, what we have seems to be working. There may be some adjustments that come down the road, but it's relatively simple. We have a good group that makes up the executive committee. If somebody has an issue or a pressing problem that they want addressed, they bring it to us. We hear the issue, and then we take a vote on what we want to do, and then we can definitely allocate funds to that issue or whatever the case may be.
And Mark, on looking at the public safety realignment allocation, if I'm just looking at population, I would think that Amarillo would get less money than counties like Calaveras and Colusa, but we get significantly more than them. So does that mean that we actually have that many more people that are incarcerated than those counties?
Well, I think that speaks to the fact that Amador County, let me back up. The way the formula was derived was how many non-non-nons you have in Department of Corrections. A non-non-non is a non-serious, non-violent, non-sex offender. And that's their commitment offense. That doesn't take into account their criminal history. So when CDCR originally looked at those numbers, it was determined that we had a lot more than those other counties that were there that met that qualification. So that drove our calculation or our funding up, because they're saying that you have to account for those individuals now under supervision when they come back.
You don't want them to review that and change it then. It's similar to the forest funding where we were on the short end of the stick on that.
Right. Yeah, we actually made out a little bit on that side of it.
Looks like you're... 13-14 allocation is up about $213,000, roughly.
And that was anticipated.
Yeah, the CSAC had been going round and round with the reallocation and how to allocate the additional funds that were coming into the AB-109 program. They had decided that they wanted to hold everybody harmless. They weren't going to take any money away from anybody who already had a set level of funding, but the future funding will be modified. That's why you see our funding going up considerably more than other people's, is because I think of the numbers that we've actually experienced versus what other folks have taken care of. So they've increased ours. It's jumping up to $210,000 between this year and next fiscal year. So the CSAC funding plan, as it's shown here, I think we are in favor of, certainly because we are the beneficiary of such a large increase compared to others.
I think it's important still to, at least going forward, some things that we need to guard against, obviously, are funding. We want to make sure, and I think the executive committee of the CCP has taken appropriate action in that we've had some discussions regarding the budget. We continue to meet monthly, and we continue to budget conservatively when it comes to funding. If for some reason something happened to funding, we want to make sure that we have that source there to at least continue our program until something else can be worked out. What that something else might be remains to be seen. Another issue is CDCR's continued population issues. I know the board and the CAO have probably heard that they continue to have population issues and need to get to a number that the three-judge panel, the federal court, had said they need to get to. So what's going to happen there? That somewhat remains to be seen. parole hearings are coming to the court in July of 2013. Part of realignment, the big package was, unless you were a certain specified offender, your parole hearing would no longer be before the parole board. You're going to be here in Amador County Court. Now, that's something that's going to be impactful a little bit possibly on the jail, and again, the sheriff can speak to that, but it's going to be impactful on the court. That remains to be seen. However, at this point, the AOC, the Administrative Office of the Courts, is the agency or department responsible for funding. So we haven't seen the court coming to us asking for money, partially because the actual impacts remain to be seen because it hasn't moved in that direction yet. And then we continue to always guard against unfunded mandates. So what we believe to be important is that realignment, under realignment, it did not and does not include any early releases from prison. Nobody was released early. Had realignment not happened, there would have been releases straight from prison with no supervision in some cases. You know, the previous system was not producing good outcomes for public safety. We think we're doing pretty good right now with that 31% violation rate. CPOC, the Chief Probation Officers of California, agreed to realignment under the premise, if funded appropriately and supported, probation and our local partners could do a really good job and increase public safety rather than decrease public safety. Refusal to implement realignment would have led to those early releases, as I said. While it's true there have been crimes committed by offenders under realignment, it's also true that those crimes were happening prior to realignment. Those same offenders were doing those crimes. It's just a different agency supervising them. So all offenders are continuing to come under supervision. And any level of crime is unacceptable, and probation works very closely with all of our stakeholders to address that issue. I think we have a tight-knit group. We have an excellent sheriff, an excellent DA. Our chiefs of police continue to work with us. We exchange information daily. I think we're doing what we need to do. Can we do a little bit better? I'd like to say we can, and I think we can. My concern is the jail's population, and again, the sheriff will more than likely comment on that. It bothers me every day when I see the number up around 95, 100. But, again, we've evaluated everybody that's in custody, and they're there for a reason. And I'll turn it over to the sheriff if there are no questions for me.
I had a question, sure. Chief Panini. You know, under AB 109, how long does it mandate funding to go to the counties to pay for basically the impacts?
Well, now it's protected. It's protected under the last election, Prop
31 or 31.
There was 30
unfunded mandates.
One of those in there.
So basically, it should be long. There should be long term funds there to
yes
cover those costs.
Yes,
should be.
Should be. Unless something comes along and they change that. But it would take another proposition to do that.
Thank you.
Chief Panini, I had one question, too, and that is when your community partnership group gets together, you commented that your office has chosen not to fill the position that was anticipated necessary, and the sheriff's office has done so as well, but behavioral health did fill a position that was allocated to them. Does that kind of decision go before your partnership group to ascertain whether the need to fill that position? I guess my understanding is we're talking about 80 or 38 offenders in that first year. Does your partnership weigh in on whether there is, in fact, a bona fide need for a department to fill those positions or not, such as you've chosen not to do?
Yes, and you know, originally when we built the plan, that was based on those anticipated issues that we thought we could bank on. Even though that number is 38 as far as that PRCS population, there continues to be the population of mandatory supervision cases that we're getting and we're seeing. There continues to be the population that was realigned that can no longer go to prison, that they are doing straight jail time. This person at Behavioral Health can also see them. But really, in the grand scheme of things, realignment is like rock thrown into the water. It rippled out and really touches everybody. That low-level misdemeanor offender that maybe did some time in jail before, prior to realignment, may not do that same amount of time in jail, if at all, under realignment. So even though they're not one of the ones coming out on PRCS were under mandatory supervision, they now cannot maybe go to jail in some respects, but come under a different set of supervision, so it's affected everybody. Everybody's been effectively realigned. So to answer your question,
your two departments haven't felt that effect to the point where they needed to hire additional personnel, and yet behavioral health did. So I was just trying to ascertain how that...
Well, don't get me wrong. We did hire three officers in my department to help with realignment. Behavior health hired their one to help with realignment. And those are based on the impacts that we saw. I chose not to fill the other one until I see the caseload get to that level.
Okay.
So, okay. But we addressed the original needs and impacts in the original report that we gave to the board here. But as we go forward, if there is a need, yes, we would hear that need. We would question, answer, and then address the need as we saw appropriate, and then allocate funding if needed to that.
So you did hire three, just not the fourth?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Chief Benigni, one question. You stated earlier you had a $500,000 carry forward.
Mm-hmm.
Are you mandated what you could use that for?
It's used for the realignment offenders. What we did was we created its own community corrections budget. And we look at it as a task force. And these individuals, even though they're not housed in the same place, that task force essentially deals with this population. And as we move forward, the idea is I didn't want it in my budget. The sheriff didn't want it in his budget. HHS didn't want it in their budget. The idea is to leave it as standalone. So then every year that goes by where there is unspent money, we don't have to allocate every dollar. We wanted to be able to continue to have that roll forward to be able to address anything that came up.
Okay, is there anything that says you might lose a portion of that if you don't use it?
No.
Okay.
Not to this point.
That amount is contained in its own budget within our budget, and it is rolled over. So we don't want any intermingling of funds. So when they come back to make sure that we haven't been using it to prop up the general fund, then we can demonstrate that quite plainly.
I think it's very prudent that we're doing that, because
absolutely,
for the future we don't have any idea. They could come in and maybe change everything. Who knows what they're doing at midnight down there at the state capitol, but I think it's very prudent.
All right. Anything else for the chief?
And who knows what yet to come.
That's right.
They still have
that's what worries us.
Still have problems with the three panel judge. So
yeah, fine.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. First of all, I'd like to start off with complimenting Chief Benigni for his leadership of the Community Corrections Partnership. It was set by statute that the chief probation officer would head that group, and Mark has done an outstanding job. A lot of our partners in other counties can't say that they work as well. And so we've had a very cohesive group from the very beginning. Everyone is treated as equals regardless of what their need is or what their position is. And I think we've come to some very rational decisions with regards to how the budget dollars are spent and why we don't spend them at certain times. But I'm here today to give you a little update as far as what the impacts have been on the Amador County Jail in particular and what we're trying to do to rectify the overcrowding issues that we continue to see. As the chief said earlier with the CDCR projections for probation, we also received initial projections from CDCR from October of 2011 through September of this year. They projected initially that we would see new local felony admissions of 84. These are people that would have gone to state prison are now coming to us. We've actually had 61 as of April 30th of this year. We're pretty much tracking maybe even a little under what CDCR projected in that category. The next category they projected were new parole violators with a new term to county jail. They predicted 5. As of 4/30/13, we've had 97. They're a little underserved themselves on that projection. In addition to those, we've had 25 flash incarcerations, which is another tool that probation can use to bring people into jail without a necessary court hearing as a quick hammer. We've had 17 PRCS violations and 4 mandatory supervision violations that have impacted our jail. We did a little study for calendar year 2012, and we found that Because of this inmate population tends to be more sophisticated, it has really impacted the operation of our jail. It's impacted the sophistication of the inmates, the threat to the inmates caused themselves and to my staff. We've also determined that 31% of all our inmate grievances that we received in 2012 came from AB 109 related inmates. We also know that they took up almost 30% of our 76-bed rated facility. That equated to 10,358 bed days that they took up in 2012. It is a tough problem for us. It has been ongoing, but again, with the complexion changing of the makeup of who's in jail and those that are getting out, we maintain about a 10 to 15% overcapacity population in there. Probation has stepped forward with their pretrial release program that the chief had mentioned. That allows them to assess who we have in custody early on in the process and make the determination, evaluating them against a threat assessment tool that's been proven to determine who are eligible to get out on pretrial release. I can tell you that 60 to 70% of my jail population are pretrial. They're waiting to go to court. And so the more we can get out on pretrial release, the better off we are population-wise. The chief and his staff have done a great job of trying to assess those people. Unfortunately, as we talk about the changing complexion of that population, fewer and fewer meet the criteria of being safe enough to release back into our community.
Sheriff, how many of those 60 to 70% of pretrial would fall outside of that non where they would be moved to state prison then if they were convicted?
You know, I'm not sure on that. What we evaluate and under the pretrial supervision program, and we refer to it as pretrial release, but they're getting released, but they're under supervision from my department by an officer that's specifically assigned to that caseload. So we do supervise them when they're released as they're going through court. What we evaluate are two issues. The first issue is the likelihood that the offender will return to court if released and under our supervision, and whether or not that offender will commit a new offense while they're pending court. Those are the only two things that we look at. Prior to realignment, probation had never supervised an offender prior to them being sentenced. We currently do that.
I don't
have that number for you.
Yeah, I was looking for the number of those that would move to state prison and actually alleviate some of that impact on our county jail.
And quite frankly, now that the bar has been raised as to who can get into state prison, that population tends to stay in custody anyway. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Sheriff, I'm pleased, sir. The 60 or 70% that are waiting for pretrial, do you have to, while they're in custody, are they segregated in any way because they are pretrial persons versus people that have already been sentenced?
Unfortunately, because of the structure of our age facility and the limited space we have, they are not. The chief also mentioned some of the budgetary considerations, and my office did ask for funding for one correctional officer and one deputy sheriff early on in the process, trying to get out in front of it in anticipation of what impacts may occur and those that we may have to fill. That chapter is yet to be written with regards to impacts that would require a deputy sheriff, perhaps one in investigations, but at this point we don't have the necessary numbers to be able to support that, and we aren't going to go forward until we can and suffer the scrutiny of an audit that eventually will come as a result of this being state money. We want to make sure we do it right and that we have a justification for that. With regards to the correctional officer, my staff has been working to identify those impacts that would be beneficial to have a position attributed to, as opposed to taking time away from my correctional lieutenant who has other jobs to do in addition to watching this population, some of the other staff in the facility. We haven't got that number yet, so we're not filling that. But when we do, that job description and the duties of that position will be brought forth to the CCP. Going through the process for a position would also have to be justified to the county and the board. We did, in addition to those positions, just fairly recently, receive $100,000 from the CCP to assist us in out-of-county housing for some of our population. For the first time that anybody can recall in my agency, we sent 8 inmates to El Dorado County, paid for their stay over there. They were gone for a total of 41 days out of my facility at a cost of $90 a day or $12,690 out of that $100,000. These are all individuals that were within 30 days of getting out. We would like to get them out close to the end of their term. We can get more people out for our money. So that's what we've been working on. Last week, we just sent three more over there. So we're working against that number. It's helpful to be able to do that. Again, it depends on the inmates and what they're in for. But these are all sentenced inmates. We don't want to run into issues with counselors and defense attorneys having to run back and forth to El Dorado County if they're supposed to be in Amador. So we take those kind of effects into consideration as well. Today's jail population, just for information, stands at 93, 81 males and 12 female inmates. Happy to answer any questions you have.
Well, I'd like to commend you and the group for doing a great job. But statewide, this thing is very volatile yet. It doesn't mean it's a huge success. The book's still out on that. And lots of problems. So, I mean, there's even talk trying to do away with this and get back to where it was, with back to state prison. So still very fluid. We'll see. Proof's in the pudding in the end. But, again, I thank you, gentlemen, for a great job.
Yeah, I know every board member feels that way. Very much tougher job for probation, but a much tougher job for correctional staff, too. They must have felt like they were on vacation before compared to what they're dealing with now.
Well, I mean, it's it's a drain on county resources in general. Every time there's something going on over at the jail, they have to call maintenance out to correct a problem. So, it's a real problem. Yeah. Jail medical, on and on and on.
And since you brought that up, Supervisor, I would also commend General Services. They do a phenomenal job of responding to our issues in the jail. We've had a few inmates that tried to send things down the facility toilets that clog the system up and flood the jail on occasion. And they come out in the middle of the night, take care of those issues for us. They do maintenance around there. In some cases, have to manufacture parts for outdated equipment that there aren't parts for. So John Hopkins and his staff have been absolutely phenomenal with their support to us, and we appreciate it.
As far as inmates that you've received, they're a little bit different class, a lot of them, a little bit more hardened, you might say.
Sorry, Supervisor?
Inmates that you've received in this program, some are a little bit more, I guess what you call seasoned veterans of the system.
Oh, absolutely. As the Chief said earlier, the non classification was based upon their last commitment offense, not their criminal history. So we're seeing people with significant history, violent history, that they're now classifying as a non because they went to the prison on their last commitment, say for a burglary or a narcotics possession, that they're now determined as nonviolent, non-serious, and non-sexual.
Also, as far as sending those prisoners over to El Dorado County, that worked out pretty good for you, too?
It does, and we've also explored potential for other counties. We're comparing rates, to see what people are going to charge us.
Frequent flyer miles.
The whole cottage industry out there amongst the sheriffs buying for business. So there are a few that have space, and so we're looking at those as well.
Well, Calaveras County may have a jail that they might not be able to afford to open.
They actually spoke to me before they opened as to whether or not we'd be interested in utilizing some of their bed space, and I told them that preliminarily we would, and we'll see how it turns out.
Make us a price.
Thank you, gentlemen. If you could just hold close to the front here. After Supervisor Novelli gets his question, I'm going to ask for public comment, and you might have to make a response to it.
Sheriff Frank, sir, you mentioned earlier 10 to 15% overcapacity on our daily. Was that for a certain year or a certain time period?
That's historical, going back since before I started in 07.
Okay. Once again, I'd just like to comment that not only to both of you, but to everybody in the law enforcement field, thank you very much for all your hard work, and we appreciate it. The board appreciates all your work. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thank you, gentlemen. Is there any public comment at this time? Morning, John.
Morning, gentlemen.
You can sign in for the record, please, John.
Yeah, sure will.
That way you only
I
have
just wanted to say I was on the Board of Supervisors when they were considering the jail site that they have now. And I voted against it. We tried to get them to put that facility out at the airport where they had room for expansion. And it amazes me in the short time that I've been off the Board of Supervisors, it's now aged and dated, outdated facility. It's amazing. And it's just too bad that we didn't get it put where we could expand it. But that was part of John Begovich's lobbying to get it where it is. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? All right, thank you, gentlemen, Sheriff and Chief. This time we move on to item 7, USDA Forest Service Proposed Planning Directives, Discussion of Possible Action Relative to Approval of the Chairman's Signature on a Letter to the USDA Forest Service Outlining the Board's Comments on the Subject Planning Directives. Mr. Hoffman, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Board. John Hoffman, consultant for Natural Resources to the Board. About a year ago, the Forest Service adopted a new planning rule, and since then they have been working on directives which guide the Forest Service or direct the Forest Service in how they will implement the planning rule. Those were released earlier this year, and then last week they extended the comment period. I reviewed the planning rule.
When they extended the comment period, how long?
For 15 days, beginning about May 8th. It was supposed to be published in the Federal Register on May 8th. I haven't checked to see if they've actually done, if that was the actual date that it came, but 15 days from May 8th, basically. So sometime next week, these comments have to be in. So the planning rule directives, as I said, direct the Forest Service in how to implement the planning rule, and so it gives a good idea of how the Forest Service views that planning rule and how they'll implement it. I reviewed it from the perspective of the county. Are they following all the rules of that allowed for the county to have substantial engagement with the Forest Service in their planning? That was my primary focus in reviewing that, and I compared their planning directives then to the planning rule. And not surprising, I found that they, in most many cases, they just lumped this back into the public without recognizing the special status that governments have. And so the letter that I would encourage you to, or that's for you to consider, basically focuses on the opportunities that are afforded in the planning rule but weren't carried forward into their direction, so that they would revise that direction and make sure that counties particularly do have an opportunity to engage a little differently in the planning process.
You said as the public, but it's the public and tribes, basically, that are given more impetus for Forest Service interaction rather than with government.
Yes, they do recognize the tribes several times, and the counties have the same rights as the tribes in the particular cases, and they lump the county in with the public, and they recognize the tribe as separate. Other times, they just lump us all together into the public. But the county is a government, and they are allowed to have government to government, and under the planning rules, the Forest Service is required to recognize and treat the county a little differently. So that occurs under the assessment, and occurs under the land management planning, and occurs under monitoring, and so several aspects. They just lumped us back in with the public, and so the letter basically calls attention and says, hey, please recognize that difference.
Questions, board members?
Yeah, John. Mr. Hoffman, sir, I had one question. What about the grazing permittees? Do you think there's going to be any help on their side in regards to this, in regards to helping them out, or is it just going to be county and tribes? Do you think the forest, because we've heard a lot of people complaining, you know, in regards to the forest is really closing down some of these trails up there for grazing. So do you think the forest will ever see their light, or maybe see the light at the end of the tunnel where they're coming from?
Forest closing those grazing leases?
I think there's a couple of avenues. One is by treating the county government a little differently, the county government can step in and represent them. So I think that's one positive aspect. Another is I do believe these rules, the planning rule is a step improvement over the previous planning rules that provide the public with a little more access to make meaningful comments and to follow up on those meaningful comments through an objection process and so on. That being said, you know, there is a tradition, a culture that gets established, and here's how we do business, and we're going to have to break that culture. But I do believe that the planning rules aid us in breaking that culture down and having the Forest Service look things a little bit differently and recognizing particularly those grazing rights.
And when you mention tribes, I think there's only two specific, correct? And then if there is more, can any other tribe get involved, or how's that work?
Yeah, any tribe that is federally recognized tribe. Okay, so it needs to be a federally recognized tribe. For our area, I think there's just two.
There's just two, right. Okay. Thank you, sir.
So in essence, it's up to us to hold them to task to make sure that they comply with all of these directives. So we need to hold their feet to the fire. We should be responsible for that.
Yes.
Well, and our MOU that we recently signed with our local Forest Ranger District aids us significantly in being able to do that, to have those more frequent meetings on a government-to-government basis. It's unfortunate, though, that at the regional and national level, they choose to try to water down their own requirements. It's in their own National Forest Management Act of 1976 requires that type of coordination and cooperation, and they've chosen to water it down a little bit more in this planning rule. But through our MOU, I think if we can work, at least try to help things here at the local level a little bit, we're poised a little better position to be able to do that.
I think that's true.
I think that's very true. And I grew up in the mountains, spent a lot of time up there, and I've watched it kind of basically change, where I think the local community used to have a lot of input, a lot of say, and the Forest Service gave a lot of weight to that. And anymore, it's almost now, it's like what I'm seeing, maybe getting back there, become a little more receptive, possibly, to hear from the local leaders what the community would like to see. But there's still a pretty big segment of the Forest Service. It appears like they're on their own little private mission, and they don't want to hear from the local communities. They love NGOs, and an NGO is it's a non-governmental organization. It's not basically representative of the people. It's a special interest group, and the complaint I have is they get a lot of sway with Forest Service decisions, actually governmental decisions. And they should not. They're not elected by the people. They're not responsible to the people. And I think their input should be looked at or given a lot less weight than they do. There is a couple changes I'd like to make in this letter. It's an excellent letter you wrote, Supervisor Forrester. Listen.
Ryan, before you go into this, I just want to comment. You're absolutely right. I mean, they cater to these special interest groups, and the first thing that happens is they threaten a lawsuit, and then, well, we're going to have to back off on this. Now we're going to have to do a study, so we're going to shut all this down. And that's the problem we've been encountering.
Big problem. That's
for a number of years.
And that's where Congress should step in and take some actions. That's an excellent letter that you penned, Mr. Forrester, with a little help from Mr. Hoffman. What I was looking at, John, was on under Chapter 10, the assessment, all about in the middle there, it has, likewise, the desire of a local community to expand forest-related businesses, probably change that to expand.
Expand, yes. Thank you.
And then a little bit further, it goes on, related business could expand, maybe change that expand to broaden the management opportunities in federal lands. And then go on a little bit farther, and it talks about require supportive management commitment from the Forest Service, add in leadership. And then the very last...
Where'd you want to add leadership, Brian?
Right after Forest Service.
after a reduction in ecosystem service?
No, I was just continuing on. In the middle of that, paragraph, it goes, but might require a supportive management commitment from the Forest Service.
And you want to add leadership there?
Yeah. Okay. In the very last sentence was, oh, maybe I wasn't reading it right. That was a little bit.